97.9 FM, WCHL, and the UNC College of Journalism and Mass Communication presents Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. Sports Focus is dedicated to in-depth examinations of issues of overarching importance in the sports world. Each week, we'll discuss problems and look for solutions to problems in professional, collegiate, and amateur sports. From Carroll Hall on the UNC campus, here's your host, journalism professor Charlie Tuggle.
Welcome to Sports Focus. Our topic today, the Knight Commission on Intercollegiate Athletics and its role in college sports today. Our guest, Walter Harrison, president of the University of Hartford and one of the newest members of the Knight Commission, which strives to ensure that intercollegiate athletics programs operate within the educational mission of their colleges and universities. And Walter will frame our discussion today around that mission statement. Let's get right to the latest news. This weekend, the members of the five power conferences approved funding the full cost of attendance for college athletes. What exactly does that mean?
The federal government has, on its forms for student financial aid, have the costs of tuition, room, and board, and then there's another category that includes things like books. And then they have another number which you fill out, which is called full cost of attendance. It usually depends on the institution, of course, but it's usually about somewhere between about $2,800 and $4,000. And what it's supposed to cover is travel back and forth from your home to the university, other incidentals you'd need while you were there, the kinds of things that at least the Power Five conference argued that many students fund by getting part-time jobs, and student-athletes can't get part-time jobs usually because of the time commitments of their athletic endeavors. So the argument was, if you fund full cost of attendance, that's somewhere between $2,800 and $4,000 per school, you'll be able to make up for what other students can do by having part-time jobs.
Yes, Shabazz Napier at the conclusion of the NC2A men's tournament this past year famously said, I sometimes go to bed hungry. So this takes care of sort of in-between meals, meals when the cafeteria is not open, travel, as you said, these incidental expenses above and beyond what had been funded before this.
Yeah, you know, so that comments really resonated, I think, all over the country. The University of Hartford's located about 45 minutes from stores. That's been repeated to me many times. I'm a little skeptical that he really went to bed hungry. University of Connecticut, like most major athletic conference, provides their student athletes with a lot of food, but they also expend a lot of energy, and therefore maybe he was hungry some nights. I don't think there are starving athletes. I do think, from personal experience, I know that there are athletes who can't sometimes travel home when they wish to because they don't have the money for an airplane ticket. So that's really what the full cost of attendance could fund them eating more. I don't think that's really a big problem for Power Five conferences generally, despite Napier's comments. But I do think the issue of how do I travel home and see my family is a major one, and would not be covered without covering the full cost of attendance.
Walter, now one of the concerns about this is that some feel that the Power Five conferences are going to be at even more of a competitive advantage than they are now. Do you see that as a problem?
Well, I suppose, you know, I have one of my favorite sayings is where you stand is usually based on where you sit. So if you're at a university that is that competes with the Power Five conferences in some sports, let's take Georgetown University, you would see that as a competitive advantage if you're playing Maryland and Maryland is able to fund full cost of attendance because they're in the Big Ten, and Georgetown, which is in the Big East, therefore not a Power Five conference, can't. You might really see that as an advantage for Maryland because they can offer their a prospective student athlete $3,000 or $4,000 more than you can. For a school like the University of Hartford, I don't think we're really competing very much with the University of Maryland for the elite athletes. So probably has more effect on schools like Georgetown and Butler and schools like that than it does on the University of Hartford.
You recently received the Gerald Ford Award for your work to improve the academic success of college athletes. You chaired the NC2A's Committee on Academic Performance for 10 years. Can you give us a quick overview of that work?
Sure. And this is directly related to the Knight Commission, and it's one of the reasons I'm so pleased to have been appointed to the Knight Commission. In 1991, when the Knight Commission was first founded by the Knight Foundation, it was meant to that one of the first major things they did was to call attention to the notion that athletics was sometimes outpacing academics, both in the way its funding was increasing, but primarily that academics is being ignored in cases where student athletes are concerned. And they published the first report that pointed that out in the 90s. And then when I joined the NCAA board in 2002, the board had taken up the call that really had originated with the Knight Commission. And I ended up 2 years later as chair of this committee. And the goal of that committee was to make academics central to the experience of student athletes and help those student athletes graduate. And over 10 years, that's what we've done. Student graduation rates have increased by 10% over those 10 years. So it's very gratifying.
And you joined Bill Friday, a very highly respected, revered man in this area who also won the Ford Award for his work when he was alive. We'll talk more about your work with the specifically on the APR when Sports Focus continues.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. And now, back to the show on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Welcome back to Sports Focus and our discussion about the Knight Commission and with one of its newest members, Walter Harrison, president of the University of Hartford. Walter, one of the things that you're noted for during your work with the NC2A is the APR. Can you quickly, to me it's a little bit confusing, but can you quickly tell us how the APR works and what it measures?
Sure. So the Knight Commission in the 90s made the suggestion that academics needed to be emphasized more in the balance between academics and athletics needed to be balanced. So Mr. Friday, who you mentioned just before the break, and Father Hesburgh at Notre Dame chaired that group, and one of the reasons I'm so pleased to be on the Knight Commission is Mr. Friday was always a champion of what we were doing, and I really cared a great deal about it. The APR APR stands for Academic Progress Rate, and it's a measurement semester by semester, year by year, of how well student athletes are progressing toward a degree. And after a great deal of working with data, the NCAA is exemplary in making data-driven decisions. And we had decided early on that we would make decisions based on data. Usually when it's involving sports or athletics, part of the appeal of them is that the apparent transparency. People want to, I can figure out this manager should have pulled the pitcher an inning before, or why did we not start so-and-so at wide receiver, or why is so-and-so coming off the bench in basketball? As fans, that's one of the great attractions. But athletics is really much more complicated. So since everybody has opinions about what would have improved academics, we decided to look at the data. And after about a year of looking at this, led by people who were impartial about this, who were simply statisticians, we concluded that the best two measurements of whether you go online to graduate if you're a student athlete are remaining eligible on your team and remaining on your team. So basically, the APR gives a point to each student athlete who receives a scholarship in every sport, and you get 1 point per semester for eligibility and 1 point for remaining on the team. We call that retention. So there's an E point and an R point. Any athlete, therefore, could get, if he's on the team, he or she is on a team for a year, would have it eligible to get 4 points. If you stay on the team, stay eligible. If you leave the team and you're eligible in one semester, you might end up with 3 points for that year. And if you were ineligible, grades weren't good enough, and you therefore had to leave the team, you'd lose 2 points. So every team, in order to remain in good standing, now needs to get 93% of the possible points they can get. That's the easiest way I know to explain it. We decided to make it simple to add a zero to, instead of having a 100-point scale, to have a 1,000-point scale. So if you're familiar with APR, you'll hear people say, so-and-so's football team had a 945 APR. That means they had 94.5% of the possible points they could get.
Okay, so if I'm an athlete and I am on the team, I get a point. If I maintain a certain GPA, I also get a point for the team. Where does the reporting of the GPA come from? Does it not come from the institutions themselves?
It does. So every institution reports, and the NCAA staff takes a look at that just to make sure it's not totally bogus. And then it's counted that way. We decided early on that we would audit a certain number of institutions every year. We would send people to the campus and take a look at every last athlete just to make sure that they were being honest. And I think it was last year, we completed auditing in a cycle every institution in Division I. And there were some institutions with problems, and we rectified those as much as we could. So I'm very confident that the numbers are accurate.
Yeah, some of the critics argue that it's because some of this reporting comes from the institutions themselves that it leaves a lot of room for fraud. And I'm wondering how APR calculates or takes into account situations like we had here at the University of North Carolina, where we had 18 years of fraudulent classes. Students were being steered toward classes that were easy, that never met. They were given grades that they certainly didn't earn. How does the system take something like that into account?
Yeah, so now this is one of the major issues. So when we looked at, when I said before that we audit institutions and we look for fraud, what we're looking for is to make sure that Walter Harrison, a baseball player at North Carolina, had the grades. You know, we look at the transcript, the grade is such and such, and we look to make sure they're on the rosters when we audit it every semester for which numbers were supported. And so we know that whatever their grades really were are the grades that were reported. And the APR has to be reported by a combination of the registrar's office and the athletics department. So, there is a little bit of an internal check and balance on that kind of fraud. What you're talking about, now the NCAA, I was around the NCAA for enough years, 12, to start saying some of their jargon without explaining it. The NCAA has a term for what happened at North Carolina. It's called academic misconduct. So what this means is somewhere along the line, it wasn't that it wasn't put in the transcript correctly. It's that North Carolina, the problem, as you just pointed out, was that someone responsible for enrolling students in a course and making sure they did the work cheated and or lied, however you want to put it. And that wasn't checked by the institution. The North Carolina case is the most depressing. I read the whole investigative report. It's one of the most depressing reports I've ever read. It bothers me not only because athletes were involved, but because students were involved, and it actually ends up cheating those athletes and the other students who were part of this. It's cheating them of their education. That's what bothers me the most. So when when this case came to light, and there were a couple other cases not quite as long and as thorough as this one or as wide-ranging, We decided we needed to look at what the NCAA laws were about misconduct, and they weren't very good. So we're in a parallel way. The NCAA is investigating the University of North Carolina situation, and on the Committee on Academics, it's now called, they are now beginning the discussion about what should we do about that. I mean, it's a little hard to go back 10 years and say, hey, this athlete shouldn't have had shouldn't have been counted in the APR in a certain way. So it's a complicated situation, but I think you'll see in the next year a lot more stringent guidelines, and they're really precisely because of the UNC question. In the meantime, the infractions committee, which is a totally different committee than ours, was taking a look at this because it involves fraudulent actions by people in the athletics department.
We'll continue this discussion in just a moment.
You're listening to Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. And now, back to the show on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Welcome back to Sports Focus and our discussion with Walter Harrison, president of the University of Hartford and one of the newest members of the Knight Commission. Walter, we were talking about gaming the system, if you will, that certainly that's possible. Whatever system there is, there's a way to game it. And perhaps that's what happened at UNC. Critics of the APR say, you know, how does Kentucky, which sends all five of its players to the pros, still have a perfect APR? So is it possible to game the system? And are these audits the way that you check that?
Well, you're absolutely right. It's always possible to game the system. And in the case of North Carolina or several years ago, there was a case at Auburn of a similar kind of academic misconduct. You know, if somebody wants to cheat and is smart enough, you can probably figure it out. I think that in both cases that there probably wasn't enough oversight, but that's a whole other issue, which the Infractions Committee in the case of North Carolina will look at. I think that, let's look at Kentucky for a minute, and I'm not staff member at the NCAA, I didn't do all this work, but we do look at it. What happens now in intercollegiate athletics is similar to what happens in all of higher education. There are a lot more different ways to take courses. So you can take courses online, you can take independent studies from time to time. So I'm pretty confident that Kentucky is acting within what the faculty of and the administrative leadership of the University of Kentucky have decided is appropriate for all students. I think we measure that very. I keep using the present tense. I'm no longer the chair, but I think we have measured that very well. I don't think that's a problem. They're clever. They know how to do it. They've thought about it very carefully. And one of the real issues is that an institution like Kentucky that has a lot of resources, that uses them to help tutor and help their students through, and I think they're doing it on the up and up, they have the resources to do that. And another university, like I'm just picking one, Mississippi Valley State, that has very little resources, just can't afford to do that for their students. So they're, in some ways, the resources available to you is one of the issues that we need to look at. You know, we haven't been totally fair to some of the institutions that just have lower resources. But I'm fairly confident that our audits would have checked very carefully on the Kentucky players.
And we have about a minute left. I was somewhat surprised doing my research for this piece that Gerald Gurney of the Drake Group has really come out strongly against the APR. I would have thought that the Drake Group and the Knight Commission were sort of hand in hand in most things as it leads to or as it pertains to college athletics. Is that not the case?
Gerald Gurney has been opposed to the APR from the minute it was announced. I don't know Gerald Gurney. I've never met him. I think I once appeared before the Knight Commission just before him, so I may have shaken his hand. So I don't really know what the issues are with him, but I don't think, to be honest, I think this is a case where whatever we did would never satisfy him. I'm not, you know, there are always going to be critics. Having critics is a good idea. It keeps you honest. I am totally confident that the APR is an accurate way to measure academic progress toward degree. And I think with the Committee on Academics, actually it was our committee, but now they're going to enforce it. We have new standards that go into place in 2016. I think we are really doing a great job for student athletes, and they're responding and graduating in even greater numbers. I'm very confident in that. Critics are good. They help keep you on your toes. But you have to have a rational conversation eventually if move on what you think is the right way to go.
And that does it for this edition of Sports Focus. Thanks to our guest, Walter Harrison. Thanks also to engineer Gary Kirk. And thanks to you for listening. Cheers.
Thanks to Richard Southall, Mark Nagel, and Deborah Southall of the College Sport Research Institute at the University of South Carolina for their research and guidance, and for access to CSRI's international network of sources. Sports Focus is a production of UNC's College of Journalism and Mass Communication.